on radio, online and on mobile. This is Sports World on the BBC World Service.
Hello from John Akers. With Lee on his winter break, I was in the Sports World hot seat on Saturday, and among my guests on the sports team was former Nigerian international Shay Olufanjana, who also had spells at Stoke, Hull and Cardiff, and Mick Clegg, one of the men credited with helping Cristiano Ronaldo become World Footballer of the Year. He used to be Manchester United's former power development coach, but now runs his own business working with elite athletes. Up for discussion, the relegation battle, Sir Alex Ferguson's love of boxing, and the secrets to Cristiano Ronaldo's transformation at Manchester United. First, what it was like for Shay sitting with me at 15 hours GMT on a Saturday.
Right now, normally you'll be on the field tackling somebody or getting past somebody trying to have a shot at goal, trying to score a goal. Of course, for myself, it's very, very difficult at the moment. Just being here is something very, very new to me, very, very different.
You're a free agent right now. Just tell us your situation then. What's happening right now?
Well, at the moment, I mean, I played with, I was out of contract after playing for Sheffield Wednesday till Boxing Day, and I've been trying to do a few things while I'm trying to wait in the wings to see which club I'm going to be playing with next.
Well, let's see if we can get you a club between now and 16 hours GMT, Shay.
That'll be great.
Let's introduce our second guest, the second half of our sports team here then on BBC World Service, and he is a man who is credited with making Cristiano Ronaldo the player we see today. Mick Clegg is Manchester United's former power development coach, now runs his own business working with elite athletes. Great to have you here, Mick. Thank you for coming.
Thanks very much, John. Nice to be here.
Now then, what was it like being fitness coach at United? You're a fan of them your whole life, and then suddenly for 11 years, you've got one of the best jobs in football.
Absolutely. I followed my kids in there. You know, Michael and Stephen actually play for the club. Because of their development that I've done with them over the years, they come to look at the type of work I did and invited me to be the first, I think, full-time gym coach in the Premiership, actually.
So tell us about your boys.
Well, Michael was the first one in there. He actually had a good few games for the first team. He was the same age as Phil Neville. Stephen came 4 years later, but he's actually 6 years younger than Michael. He played up to the reserve team level. And then he became my assistant once his football career was over for 5 years, developing the kids.
And they helped get Dad a job.
Absolutely.
Finally, all that hard work, all those sleepless nights when they're little boys, finally they come up trumps for you, Mick.
Started driving me crazy, they actually helped me to the best job there was.
Absolutely. To see them struggling now, how does that feel under
United.
David Moyes right now?
Well, it's a real shock. It is a shock. Something that I didn't really want to see, but things happen.
You worked alongside some legends at Manchester United, I think it's fair to say. But how receptive were the big name players to your ideas, which are a little bit different, aren't they? Is it quite obvious that some work harder than others, some are more receptive?
Absolutely, because everybody has their own ideas. Every person is individual. I was very fortunate because I was introduced to Roy Keane as one of the first top professionals down at United. And we hit it off straight away because he loved boxing and he actually had some boxing matches. So I had a boxing team at the time and I had it for 14 years. So we hit it off. And of course, Roy was the captain. So he didn't like anybody not doing work that they should be doing. And he was introducing other people to me, which made me have a fantastic opportunity. Because if Roy said do it, in general they did.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, especially if he's boxing.
Exactly.
Especially if he's boxing. So you can start clanging. You can start dropping some of those names now. What were they like, some of those players in that period? You've mentioned Roy there, terrific trainer and also motivated others. What about the rest of them?
Well, I mean, I could just name them all. I mean, Teddy Sheringham stands out, you know, Gary Neville. But in a different way, Paul Scholes. And then at the time, really, Ryan Giggs was the absolute epitome of somebody who wanted to do everything possible. And he was only put into number two spot from my point of view because of Ronaldo coming along. And he realised what Ryan was doing and he ramped it up. He made sure he was doing more.
Yeah. Shay, what were you like then? What are you like as a trainer?
Yeah, well, I try to train very, very hard. I mean, for me, because of my background, because of where I've come from, to have found myself in England, it's a dream come true. And every session I wanted to make the most of because it was a brilliant opportunity. I wasn't the best of players, I would say that. I wasn't the best talent to come from Nigeria. But having the opportunity is something I wanted to take with both hands. So every session was very, very important for me.
Mick, I mean, training elite athletes like myself and Shay, must be a great thing to be able to do. What's your mantra when it comes to that then? What are you really drum into players?
Well, I drum into the players that they got to think about what they need. It's not what I can see that they need, it's what they feel they need. And if you can work with that, then you pick, I pick things up along the way, see what they think, see what I think. We mix them ideas together and then try things. And if it's working, then we crack on. If it doesn't work, that's the thing with Ryan. He would tell me straight away, look, this ain't going to work for me, so we don't do it. And that was the end of it, And then you crack on with something else, a new idea. You've got to have different ideas. There's too many people in coaching that think that you just go by the book and it's all, written before. Well, it's not. It's all about creativity.
Cristiano Ronaldo, then. Tell me about him, because, of course, World Footballer of the Year. And
again,
early on in his career, what was he like when you were working with him?
He was open eyes, open ears, and always willing to do anything. He knew that because United won the treble, the players that they produced were fantastic, and he wanted to get on that team. And so he knew that he couldn't just come in and do an ordinary job. He had to do a superior job. So he looked to everybody. What can these people give me? They're here at the club, they're doing their job. Let's see what we can find out from them. And he tried with everybody to get the best out of them. And I like to think that that's what he did with me. And of course, I was up for it. Mm. I was always up for that. To have somebody with that talent, but young, the possibilities were endless. And so I would talk to him, we would train things, we would train with something different the next day. And he was always up for it. Right, what shall we do next? What do you think after that game I should be working on? It was just an absolute pleasure, an absolute dream.
So that drive to be the best, Mick, that was in him, was it? Or did you have to bring that out of him and push him?
No, that was his desire. It was his desire to learn. He wanted to learn what we needed to do, and he wanted to come to the best club in the world because he thought it was the best club in the world to be at because of the ideas, because of what had happened to Manchester United and the name that they had. And, of course, once he got there, he weren't just going to wait around to see what came to him. He wanted to go out and find out what was possible, and he was the best trainer I've ever trained.
Did I read somewhere that he even had a swimming pool at home because he took it all back with him and he wanted to do swimming at home? Is that right?
Yeah, on the continent, they tend to train in the morning and then in the evening because it's so hot during the day. Yeah. So he was used to training twice a day anyway. And now in Manchester, when it's raining all the time, you get training done, you get in the gym afterwards and then you go home. That's the norm. But Cristiano knew that he had to do an extra session. So the swimming pool was very important in the afternoon or early evening to do the extra little bit that he felt he needed.
Is there a swimming pool in the Olifantjana household, Shay?
I was almost jumping in there, to be fair. I don't think I'm blessed enough to have a swimming pool. But of course, I had some other things I did. I mean, because what Mick just said, it's a question of training twice a day in Africa. I mean, where Nigeria, in this instance, where I've come from, and we're so much used to that. And when I first got to Europe, I struggled because we were training in the morning and you had nothing to do for the rest of the day. Most of our games doesn't get played until like 5, 6 p.m. in the afternoon. I'll go to the gym in the morning. I'll go and do something, even if it's just to get a sweat on, get some stretches done, because that was what my body was used to. And I still do that up till today.
Stay there, my guest. Fascinating insight into fitness in football.
On radio, online and on mobile, this is Sportsworld on the BBC World Service.
Football's rulemakers have been meeting in Zurich today. One change is that players in this summer's World Cup will be banned from displaying any messages under their shirts. Well, new rules come into force on June the 1st saying players should not display any personal slogans on any shirts they're wearing under their kit. Shay Olifantjana, are they just being spoil sports? What's all this about?
Yeah, well, I think it's the right thing to do because, we're talking about the World Cup and there's so many unrest in the world at the moment. I don't think it would be a good thing to display anything because what means nothing to you can mean something to someone else. And, if you can cut that out totally, I think it's a sensible thing to do.
Okay, but I tell you what, Mario Balotelli, why always me, is one of my favourite Premier League moments ever. And if they're going to take that away from us, I think personally it's a little bit of a shame. Mick, what was Sir Alex Ferguson like? I bet you get that question a bit, don't you?
I get that quite a lot, yeah. He, the way I see him was a man who observed. He watched everything and he knew what was going on. And his office was overlooking the car park and he watched the players coming in. He watched them go out onto the training ground. He watched them on the training ground. He watched them come back in. And he always picked the team, of course, knowing what people like on an hour-by-hour level. And that's very important. He didn't pick the big names. He picked the people who was ready for the game. he knew that he had to look five, six games ahead, perhaps, and he had to make sure his whole squad were involved. He was always a man to listen and also to talk when need to talk, the hard talk or the soft talk, whenever needed.
Did you see the hairdryer in action?
I'm admitting to nothing, but I saw him in the gym, and that was occasionally because I had to drag him down there under normal circumstances. So he was a man who needed to look after himself because of all the pressure he was under and all the work he had to do. So yeah. I had to literally drag him down, if I could, into the gym to do some work to keep his health.
Yeah, because he had problems with his heart,
absolutely,
didn't he? So you helped him through that period, did you?
Yeah.
What did you used to do?
Well, you know, you give him some nice, easy stuff on the bike, cross-trainer, stuff like that, some a little bit of weighted stuff, but he loved the boxing. He wanted to do the boxing, but sometimes he had to calm it down a little bit.
Sir Alex Ferguson, boxing.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine, Shay?
Well, I wouldn't put anything past him.
You wouldn't mess with him, would you?
No chance.
Was he any good?
Yeah, he had a fair old punch on him.
Did he?
Verbal or with his hands, yeah. He could throw a punch.
Yeah, I bet. Shay, you played against Manchester United, of course, when they were managed by Sir Alex Ferguson. And at their very peak, when Cristiano Ronaldo was playing, what were they like to play against?
Yeah, well, and in Manchester United side, it's always a good side. Well tested, well drilled. They knew what they were doing at all times. Unfortunately, on the day, Manchester United Stoke, I had the privilege, so to speak, of marking Cristiano Ronaldo. And I mean, you know, everybody knows the result, don't they? So, of course, it's a big privilege having to play at Old Trafford. The result for me wasn't very, very important. It was just a question of me going out there and actually playing for a club I've supported since I was a baby.
It was 5-0, wasn't it?
You didn't have to say this.
Sorry, I was there as well.
This course wasn't important, I said.
Yeah, he tried to avoid that one, didn't he? Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, scored a couple that day, including a couple from way out that sort of wobbled in the air and beat Thomas Sorensen.
On radio, online and on mobile, this is Sports World from the BBC.
Mick Clegg, former performance coach at Manchester United. A question for you on our social media pages. You're being asked by Dane in South Sudan. Who do you think can step up to perhaps become the next Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United? Have you got any insight for us? Especially as an athlete, I guess, which is where you generally... That's your point of view, of course, from what you do.
I've absolutely no idea what's going on at Manchester United. I have my own gymnasium where I'm looking for the new Ronaldo. I've got five players from different sports as well. It's not just about football for me anymore. But I've got five players who come to my gym who are exceptional.
In what kind of different sports?
Well, one's taekwondo, football, and also speedway.
Speedway?
Mm.
I suppose you have to have a strong core for that, do you? And keeping yourself on the bike? No brakes on those things, are they?
Absolutely, yeah. Very quick reactions and the ability to apply pressure in the right place at the right time.
Now, Shay, you're considered one of the most honest guys to ever play for Nigeria, I think it's fair to say. You once said fans attacking your bus was deserving after the way you guys played during a qualifier. Is that true?
Of course it is. I mean, I think fans and supporters they've got a right to their opinion sometimes. And to be fair, a lot of the times I think they're right because they support the club. They go out of their way to go and make sure we do well, support the team and all that. It was a particular game we played. We didn't play well. Nigeria is such a country. It's just very much like England. The pressure is so much on. If you're going to be done in that jersey, you better be ready. Otherwise, they'll come at you in all sort of ways. And on this particular day, we didn't play well. And everybody was trying to mince words about, trying to be clever about words. And I just came out and said, you know what? We deserve that. We weren't good enough. It wasn't a friendly game. It was a major game. And we needed to play well. We needed to win that game. Unfortunately, we didn't. So they were right in that instance.
Half time, Stoke City 0, Arsenal 0. And I've got to mention quickly, Shay, one of my favourite ever Stoke City goals was scored off about 15 of your body parts against Arsenal. Tell me about that goal. Come on.
I knew that was coming. I just knew that was coming, especially with Stoke playing Arsenal. Well, it was one of my best goals, I would say. It was a typical Tony Pulis goal. A throw, obviously, from Rory Della flicked on, and I got on it, and I had my hands, my head, my nose, everything touched the ball before I went into the net.
Daniel in Uganda is asking, how did you manage to balance the books with football? Because you have a degree. Tell us about that, Shay.
Well, I'm one of the very, very few privileged ones to have had the opportunity of studying. I've got a first degree in chemical engineering. I've got a master's in project management. I was from an educative background, if you like. And it's always been the emphasis. If I was going to play football, it was always going to be secondary. The primary assignment for me was to go to school, make sure I get myself educated. Football, I was okay. I think I was okay when I was growing up, but I thought I wasn't very, very good or wasn't good enough to make it at a professional level. So it's always about education for me. And I've always managed to juggle both. Of course, it's taking a lot of discipline. But as an individual or whatever thing you want to do in life, you've got to be disciplined, otherwise you'll fall by the wayside. And that's always been my philosophy.
That's interesting. You didn't believe you're good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's me. I wouldn't say I'm a pessimist, but I always like to sort of look at things from the negative point of view. So if I get the positive side of it, it's a bonus.
Does that help you then? Does that help you?
Of course it does. It's nothing to do with me lacking confidence or anything. Of course, I will give everything my best. If I'm going into anything, I try to give it the best I can. But then it's a question of being realistic, if you like.
Mick, that's an interesting philosophy, isn't it? Because I imagine you're in the head of a lot of sports people.
Absolutely,
as well,
yeah.
Elite athletes. What about Shay's way?
In general, that's not the way, I would say. You know, most of the athletes that I've come across, they're very, very positive and they have high hopes. And high hopes bring high hopes with some of the best. You know, that's what I've observed, you know.
But it helps Shay to get to the top level.
Absolutely.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Mick, you managed to run a gym as well at the same time as working at United. What made you finally leave sort of a dream job like that? Or did you leave it?
Well, you know, there's some things you can't talk about on radio at the moment. Especially when you're seeing a sinking ship at the moment over at Old Trafford, which is sad. But I across the years, obviously worked with a lot of top players and also went across the world and saw a lot of different ways people were training. And I put a philosophy of training together, which are called the Seed of Speed. Mm. And it was all about the different ways of training and how to train. I needed to be left alone to be able to work with these ideas. And I knew that they would be successful. And they are being successful. And you need a place where you can... It's a lab, if you like.
Yeah.
So you can just get on with your job. But you need good quality athletes, obviously. And the most important thing is the brain. And how can we work with the brain, with the athlete, with the physical stuff, and then really produce something. And I feel that I'm well on the right track.
Now, you got injured, Shay, during a Nations Cup tournament and pulled out with injury. It's un-Nigerian to do that, according to some fans. Players would rather hide it and participate. Why didn't you on that occasion?
Yeah, because I felt like I'd be blocking someone's opportunity. It might be someone's destiny. That's me. Of course, I was a major part of the team at the time. It would have been very, very easy for me to sort of cover up and to make sure I joined the party to go to the African Cup of Nations. But I said, I was there with some players who I knew might not be going to the tournament. Not because they're not good enough, but because they're not experienced at that level. And what good would an Olofejano be at the African Cup of Nations if he's not going to play just because he wanted to go and pick up medals if the medals were available? So I thought it wasn't going to be fair, so I pulled out of it.
Is it right you recently made some donations to the family of late Nigerian midfielder Samuel Hawke-Oraji, who collapsed and died during a 1990 World Cup qualifier? You were at the game as a boy, weren't you, watching?
Yeah, I was only about 8, 9, 10 years old at the time. My senior brother took me to the game on the day. That was a very, very memorable day, if you like, because the game was meant to be at 4 o'clock. Myself and my brother got there for 12. And at 12 o'clock, the fans outside were more than those inside of the, because it was a major, major World Cup qualifier. We were to play Angola on the day. It was jam-packed. But thankfully, myself and my brother found ourselves in the standing terrace. We had to stand and watch the game. Unfortunately, Oparaji died. So I haven't been there and haven't had the privilege of playing for the Super Eagles myself. I knew what that young man at the time must have gone through, and the family to have lost a gem in him. I mean, it was the right thing to do for me to sort of make a donation to the family.
And Mick, a number of the players you work with at Manchester United have gone on to be managers, haven't they?
Yes.
Like Roy Keane, you mentioned earlier on. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, of course, at Cardiff. Could you always see that in them?
Definitely Ole. I thought Roy would have a go. And I think he could be a great manager, Roy Keane. It's just getting the right thing at the right time. I think this is excellent what he's doing at the moment with Ireland. But I think he'll come back as a manager. I've learnt a lot. And be ready. He sees things so well. Mm. in a different way than Ollie Gunnar does. You know, they're completely different personalities, and probably both of them could do really well. But Roy is a fantastic personality. I know he's, you know, he says things as he means, and people are not always happy with that.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to be honest in life, and people are holding back and not saying things and not talking to players, this, that, and the other. Roy would always speak and say what he thought, and at least you would know. And that's what he was like with the players at United as the captain. Everybody knew where they stood, and that's a fantastic place to be, in the place that you know where you are.
Mm. Shay, talk us through what your plans would be for after you retire. Would you like to get involved in the setup with Nigeria or the football setup back home one day?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind, but there's got to be sanity there. I don't want to just go there and just add to the number. I just don't want to do my own thing like that. If I'm gonna go there, I want to add my twist on things. I want to change things a little bit, which is part of the reasons why I've with the help of a few directors, have a football academy in Peria Soccer Academy. It's called. In Nigeria, because I personally believe if you're going to add value to something, you need to sort of put a few things in place yourself. I mean, I haven't played football. I haven't had the pleasure of playing football professionally. Form an academy, help the youngsters develop yourself that way. But with regards to what I'm going to be doing after football, I've got my hands in a few things. Like I said, I've just said, talked about the academy. I'm doing my A license at the moment as well. And thankfully, I'm a little bit educated, so I can go into the oil industry.
Got a while left in those legs yet. We've got to get you a club, by the way. We've got about 90 seconds to get you a club by the end of this hour.
Absolutely. Please get on the phone, please.
So you've got another year left, you think, Shay, playing?
Another year or two, I'll say.
Another year or two. Okay. And Mick, what are your hopes for the future? You're obviously to try and develop these five that you've got at the moment, but what are your plans?
Not just the five. Yeah. My plans are to make some of the best players in different sports in the world. And I honestly believe I can do it. You know, we've got the technologies, we've got the understanding, we've got the experience. And so it's just a matter of doing the job.
Listen again to our best bits on Audio Boom at BBC Sports World.